time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into the Batter Up podcast. Caleb Johnson here with Joe Patrick. A little different setup today, Joe. I will warn the folks, I am on what I guess can be considered a little bit of a vacation down here in Savannah, Georgia, visiting some family. So, different backdrop. You can hear little birds chirping, you know, little wind chimes going.
If you want to do it every week, I enjoy it a ton. Getting to hear all the nature sounds in the background and getting to look at your backdrop is quite peaceful. So, I appreciate it.
No, it's honestly, it's one of those things. It's been really nice to come down here and just everything seems to move slower down here. You know, you just wake up in the morning, very casual coffee situation, go for a nice walk. My wife's aunt has a new dog, so we take the dog for a walk or a golf cart ride. It's just, it is much easier down here. Honestly, if I could come down here every weekend, absolutely would make it happen. But it may not work for the rest of my life, the other things, you know, we have going on. So we take advantage of it when we have it. Joe, I think we should kind of jump straight into this, that there are some things with the Braves this week that have caught our attention, I would say. That might be the understatement of it all, in that the Braves have had a complete turnaround from where they were a week ago.
I know, it's so funny. I was actually looking at the records from past years, and you know, after turning around an 0-4 start, I think they were back to 4-4, and then which I think matched what they were in 2019 through 8 games, and one game behind where they were last year. So even though they lost last night, now they're 4-5. It's like, okay, we're not in as bad a situation. It's obviously always kind of disconcerting when you're just trying to wait out for that first win, and it feels like it's never going to come, especially when you start that way. But was good to get that, you know, get the first and the second on the same day as they did last week, and then just kind of roll from there.
Yeah, I think that was the main thing, was you just needed the first one.
Yeah.
And as much as it's that old saying in baseball, it really is true, because to your point, the Braves were able to take two wins in the same day, having a doubleheader, where not a bad scenario where you get Max Fried and Waskar Ynoa, and Ynoa was the better pitcher of the day. Yeah. Goes 5 innings without allowing a run. I mean, just
against even Strasburg, you know, just like battling Strasburg, and you win that game.
Exactly. About as ideal of circumstances as you could expect out of what you at one time were considering an opener, but now are we calling Ynoa a starter?
I think so. I mean, he was stretched out as a starter in spring training, so I'd consider him a starter at this point. I mean, his start obviously was the game where it was supposed to be that bullpen game. Turned out the bullpen game was Max Fried's start. He only went, I think, 2 innings in that game. He just had a bad outing and got hit by that ball in the foot. And not that he's not injured or anything, but kind of funny how there was just a role reversal there. So, yeah, been a crazy week, but a very good week, I think, for the Braves. And it was telling, I think, after they did win those two, you could sense the relief. You know, of course, before they win the first game, it's always like, ah, no, it's no big deal. We're, you know, long season, totally fine. But then when they win the first one, it's like, yeah, we needed that.
Yeah, no, I agree, because it's one of those, you almost just need that reminder of, like, we can win. Like, we're not going to go 0-162, you know, like, because
yeah,
you get those jokes going out on social media, but then there is, to some effect, something in the back of your mind as an athlete where you're like, I mean, we can't we, you know, you just, especially the way this Braves team is built, where, I mean, this is a team built for outlasting a long season and making it deep into the postseason, that it just, they needed the first one. They get it against the Nationals. And then I think, Joe, an added level is the fact of coming home to Atlanta, sleeping in your own bed, and then getting a second shot at this Phillies team who really took advantage of you that first time around in the cold weather. You get home to, I guess it wasn't it wasn't exactly perfect conditions, much like it is here in Savannah, which is like 75 degrees, but it was much warmer, and you're at home, and there are people in the stands.
Yeah, definitely. I think important to remember, too, for the players is that, you know, when they start the season on the road with a couple series on the road, they're going straight from Northport to Philadelphia. In a typical season, they would come home, play a couple games in the home stadium, you know, see their family and things like that before they go up there. But obviously, with the COVID protocols and everything, they just had to go straight up there. So they had, yeah, they've been away for a long time. So I think that it was helpful for these players to finally get back to Atlanta and, yeah, see their families and be comfortable here. I will say, as somebody who was very much fortunate to be in the stadium for this opening series, just how amazing the atmosphere was in the stadium. I know, like, I had a friend who texted me about it, kind of, like, worried about the COVID situation because lots of fans. And I do understand kind of the hesitance in terms of just seeing crowds back, even though this is, what, 33% capacity or whatever. But beyond that, I think that it was just an amazing feeling. And when you walk into the ballpark, when you're walking outside the ballpark, you just see happy people and people who are just, I think, very gratified, like I was, to be there. And it was just a great experience. And so I would just encourage anybody, you know, obviously you're any health risks that you want to take are up to you. But if you are feeling like you would like to get out, I would strongly encourage you do whatever you can to grab yourself some tickets, because it is just a great, it's nourishing for the soul. It was for me, at least, to be back out there. So I can't wait for everybody to kind of experience that sooner rather than later.
And we also got to see a really cool experience with a guy by the name of James Scott and his son Joshua, who are Phillies fans, who I think live in Atlanta, but I'm not entirely sure how they ended up in Atlanta, but were here long enough that came to see a game, caught a Freddie Freeman home run ball, and ended up dropping it into what it looked like the water, just off the wall, into the bullpen, get the ball back, and then James's son Joshua gives the ball to a Freddie Freeman fan, a young kid, just showing what, I don't know, not what sports is all about, but just, it's nice to see people being kind.
Kind of is.
It's, yeah. Like,
it's what being a sports fan should be all about, you know? It's like, yeah, that's just kind of, it's the unique thing about sports.
Yeah, so I've always been one, and I don't think this is really a hot take, but I absolutely despise the idea of catching a home run ball and throwing it back if you're a fan of the opposing team. Because if you've ever gone to games, you know, as a kid, all the way up into an adult, I am about to be 27 years old, have never caught a ball at a Braves game. Like, it just, foul ball, home run ball, none of that. I've never caught it before. Still would, you know, I feel like I wouldn't fight somebody, but I would definitely go after a ball pretty emphatically to try to get one. And the idea that you catch it and, oh, it's not for your team, so you should throw it back. Like, no, I'm absolutely against that. So I actually
seeing wasteful.
Exactly, yeah. So seeing what Joshua did, I'm thinking, well, first off, I probably would have held on to the ball, but seeing what he did was like even a step further. It's like, that's what you should do. You catch a ball, don't throw it back onto the field where it's going to end up with one of the players who, you know, just gets recycled back into game balls. Like, give it to a fan who's going to remember that for the rest of his life. And then it was really cool to see what the Braves and the Phillies did by getting Joshua a signed ball from Freddie Freeman and Bryce Harper so that he had some sort of a memory. Just as much
and
class.
And you don't get that. You don't get that unless you have fans in the stands. Like, and that's, you know, that's, it yeah. matters. It matters. It matters that they're not cardboard cutouts. It matters that there are actual human beings out there.
No, you are 100% right. It really makes a difference having those fans there. It does for the players who pick up that extra sense of energy. Even if it's just 14,000, you know, they can. There's something where I was about to say, there's something we're going to get into here in a minute that was rather memorable for Braves fans. But watching the TV broadcast, they talked about the idea of, hey, there might be only 14,000 here, but you couldn't tell from the way that they made a difference, made an impact with their voices and the noise that they could make.
Yeah, totally. So it was just so great, and I recommend everybody get out there as soon as you can, because I know if you're listening to this, you're obviously a Braves fan. So, but let's get into – I want to get right into this kind of situation that happened last night with Alec Bohm. He was the Phillies runner who scored from third base on a sac fly that turned out to be the winning run scored in the top of the ninth inning. People are saying that it decided the game. It didn't technically decide the game because the Braves did have a chance to go up and hit and try to tie after he scored that. But essentially, it was the decisive run, and it was a run that should not have stood. He did not touch home plate, despite replay having looked at it and I guess not seeing an angle that they proved to be conclusive. It was interesting situation to me, Caleb, because I think it really exposed a lot of the flaws in the replay system as it's been implemented in Major League Baseball. I'm a person who is generally anti-instant replay in baseball to help, in sports to help officiating. And obviously, when something like last night happens, everybody says you just get rid of it. There's no point in having it. Get rid of it. I generally think it has a huge role to play in baseball, and I think that it has helped the game because in baseball you're deciding a lot of calls that are very black and white, and that there are natural pauses in the game to take a look and you know, see what the call is, see what the right call should be, and it prevents delays from managerial arguments and things like that. But I think that last night obviously showed that it's not a perfect system, and that, you know, they've implemented things that I think were probably well-intentioned, like a limit on how long a play can get reviewed before they get the game going again. But it seemed to me like the best angle came in on the TV broadcast, at least, and I don't know what they're watching on the replays, but it seemed like the best angle came in right as soon as, like, they'd already taking off the headsets, and they had decided on what the call was going to be at that point. What was your overall take on the situation?
Well, so I think for starters, the umpires who are on the field are not the ones making the decision on whether to reverse it or whether the call stands. There is a group in, Secaucus, I think, who are up in New York.
NBA. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So up in New York.
Same kind of deal, though. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. A group up who are completely out of the situation who are making this decision. However, to my understanding, they are not blind of what the decision that has been made on the field. So what you end up getting 9 times out of 10 is whatever the call is on the field, they want to support their umpires by continuing with their call. I think instant replay in Major League Baseball is totally different than in other sports because of how they use it, and it really just seems, I feel like we have way too many instances of the call is just upheld because it is some sort of weird idea that we need to support our guys and the decisions that they've already made, so we're just going to stick with their call. I don't know whether their umpires, the union, that's the word I was looking for, the union just being more tight-knit and wanting to stay together. You know, I don't know what it is. I think part of it is the idea of moving to electronic, you know, calling balls and strikes, everything like that, moving in to Major League Baseball. I feel like they get weary of all of those things, and so they want to stick with their call. I hated the decision that was made last night because it was incorrect. I mean, we have the camera angles to see that it was incorrect, which is why, Joe, I said on this very podcast, 3-4 weeks ago, give me electronic balls and strikes, give me a camera, you know, whatever robot, whatever you want to call it, behind the plate calling balls and strikes, and I will throw out instant replay and just let whoever is on the field let human error play in and just play with human error, but give me precise balls and strikes.
I agree. You know, the word that you're going to hear about all after all this is, and what needs to be corrected is that there needs to be transparency. There needs to be more transparency in the way that video replay is used in Major League Baseball to correct these calls. And I agree. But I think that we need to be more specific about what we mean when we talk about transparency. I think that just like the NBA does, it should be I think they should broadcast the conversation that the umpire is having with officials. If they want to keep kind of using the same system, I don't see why it wouldn't benefit fans, honestly, and the officials, you know, that are in these situations. So that fans can be aware of what exactly is going on, because you don't always know. And it helps everybody, in my opinion, in that situation. You know, I also think that one of the things that they should consider is letting the umpires have more responsibility or more accountability in this, in terms of just like, let them look at the replay and make the call. I'm not as big of a proponent of the call. There must be irrefutable evidence to overturn the call, and if you don't have like a clear camera angle, that you know, like, we can make our best judgments. It's not reasonable for us to think that we're going to have the perfect camera angle on every play to decide everything. So at some point, you just have to make do with the best information that you have at hand and make the best decision that you can. Maybe there's something that is inconclusive, and you know, the best decision is to just kind of leave the call in the field. I think that call should be in the hands of the official, of the head umpire who's officiating and administrating that game on the field. That's just my personal opinion on it. You know, obviously the league is going to want to have some kind of say as well, but I think that would be kind of something that the union could get behind, because that would be something that just gives umpires a little bit more authority. And I'm with you also that, you know, I think robot calling balls and strikes would be great for the game, and just in terms of, you know, keeping consistency, streamlining games, making them quicker, that kind of thing. But I think that baseball umpires kind of want to. They're afraid of losing, you know, everything that they do that makes them relevant in the game. And so I think that giving them more responsibility in these replay decisions could be one of the ways that kind of gets them some responsibility and some accountability back.
Yeah, I agree, because in everything else that they do, the accountability is on them. I think about, I can't remember the umpire's name, but the one who blew the call. There's been two different umpires who blew a call for a perfect game on the final out.
Yep.
And they are directly associated with that instance happening. It's not we sent it up to unnamed people. They decided it's not in our hands. Like, there is someone tied to that, and it's someone distinctly makes that decision, as well as them making all the other calls. So, I'm with you.
There's a happy medium, right? I think that's what we can agree on, that there's a happy medium in between those two places for replay.
Yeah.
No,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to move us on a little bit past that. I thought it was fascinating to hear. Obviously, you know, when the SNIT came on, he was frustrated. The players, you know, Drew Smyly called it embarrassing. Travis d'Arnaud said, might as well get rid of it.
See, Drew Smyly says that, and I'm like, oh, you're going to talk about the play and not about how you played yourself? I was like, oh, okay, making a little scapegoat, you know, spreading the blame there for the fact that you gave up five runs, you know, five earned in that game. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as he said that, I was like, ooh, I know that one's coming. But most interestingly, Dansby Swanson came on and was like, I wanted to come out here and talk to you guys because I wanted to make a statement saying that it was completely inappropriate how the fans in the stadium reacted, throwing some things on the field. He said it was disrespectful to the players, it was disrespectful, but it's a player safety issue, but it's disrespectful to the grounds crew, to the people who have to clean these things up. And I just thought it was kind of worth pointing that out. If you go to a game, just like, that should be like the one thing where it's like, you just don't throw something on the field. Like, just do something else to carry out your frustration. But that should be like an easy thing to be able to abide by.
Yeah, but I also think part of that is the as someone who has had a job cleaning behind other people, you don't realize that, yes, this is a public space, but someone else is going to have to go pick that up. And I think too many times we kind of get into a mental state of being better than, and like, well, they get paid to do that. And it's like, No, they get paid to properly maintain the facility, is not to clean up after you because you're mad and so you want to throw your beer bottle onto the field, which, to your, you know, like you were saying, it kind of is a safety issue. You know, something can shatter, something can, I mean, there's all kinds of weird injuries that happen to Major League Baseball players all the time. They don't need flying objects added to the list of things that can injure them. You know, I think they do just fine in their own personal lives. As far as seeing what the product has been on the field for the Braves, getting outside of the controversy, I've been surprised, and I don't know about you, Joe, in the fact that the starters for the Braves have looked so pedestrian and the bullpen has come out so strong.
Repeat that, because you froze up on me real quick.
I'm sorry. For everybody everybody listening on or watching on Facebook Live, I am in Savannah in an area that maybe doesn't have the perfect Wi-Fi, so it gets a little spotty every now and then, but we're working through it for the most part. What I was saying, Joe, is the idea, I did not expect the Braves starters to be so pedestrian and then the bullpen to be what comes out and is instead the strong point of this Braves season. Like, if you had told me before the season, oh, the starters are going to be what you're going to have to worry about, and the bullpen is what, even with injuries, is looking fine, like, would you have expected that? I don't think I would have.
Yeah, no, I think it has been surprising to an extent. I was always more confident in how this bullpen was going to perform than I feel like a lot of people. I know that, you know, I feel like a lot of Braves fans have highlighted, obviously the bench was kind of the big weak spot of this team coming into the season, but I also feel like the bullpen has been kind of pointed in the same direction as well. I guess when you lose a guy like Mark Melancon, it's understandable, who was, you know, your closer last year. That's a big piece you're replacing.
And Shane Green.
And Shane Green. That's fair. I've always just been confident in Will Smith to be able to replace Mark Melancon. He's looked okay. He's had a couple dominant outings, or maybe just one so far this regular season. But he was dominant in spring. And I don't know. I guess I'm just confident in Will Smith. The Chris Martin situation is where this thing gets really interesting, because there's really no telling how long he's going to be out. It seems like at first they wanted to just kind of give him a couple days without throwing, not make any roster moves or anything, and see how it played out, because he came out of that the last outing with the feeling some tingling in his fingers, which indicates some nerve damage that could be done in the elbow. They're saying it's a shoulder, I think, he is how he was listed, because they did finally put him on the IL a few days ago, and they recalled Jacob Webb. But that's a big piece that you're missing, because he was like your top right-handed arm in the back of the bullpen, and you're going to have to find a guy who can step up and replace him when you need to go against a right-hander. I think Sean Nuka might have some decent reverse splits, and they've been using him late in games so far. Is Luke Jackson going to be that guy? Probably not. I like Jacob Webb, who they called back up, who was very unfortunate to miss out on the opening day roster, but good that he's back up now. I have a lot of confidence in him, but he's not been put in these situations so far in his career. So I don't know, it will be interesting. But Chris Martin now on the IL, and we don't really know how long he's going to stay on the IL. He's on the 10-day right now, but I think it's probably just down to, like, they're just going to try to rest him until some of this stuff goes away. But honestly, we don't really know exactly how long that's going to take.
Yeah, I think it's such an odd injury, because it's not something direct that you can just go in and fix. Exactly. It's one of those, you need rest, you need to see how this heals, that is so concerning, because you could just continue to see him being placed on the injured list. I am fine with Jacob Webb coming up, because I think he'll fit in nicely to what's going on. Sean Newcomb has looked, I mean, as well as I could have wanted him to look this season. So I'm definitely not disappointed in the performance that I'm seeing from Nuke. However, I'm in a bit of a maybe hot takey position in that based on what I've seen so far through we're 9 games in, I want to see Will Smith and AJ Minter switch roles. I'm ready for it. I think when you're at a position where the pitcher who is throwing the hottest at, you know, whatever point in your season, you know, I know that Will Smith has been a closer in the past, and so he's kind of in that defined role, but it's not like he's limited in the pitches that he throws. Are they not diverse enough that he couldn't be pushed up earlier and put into a less stressful situation? I'm just so impressed from what I've seen from AJ Minter this year, who I believe has one of the lowest, if not the lowest, ERA amongst the bullpen. And it's just confidence. I think confidence is such a big thing that I'm seeing out of him, that I want confidence coming in the ninth inning, not a guy who's coming out that I'm like, oof, he's looked a little rough this year and I'm not sure that it's all clicking. So that's where my brain's been working the last couple of games and what I've seen out of those two guys.
I wouldn't mind seeing that, honestly, other than the fact that I have Will Smith on my fantasy team. But, but you know, I think you're totally right about AJ Minter. I think it's confidence, and I think it's also, for him, it's confidence in his health. Got in that car wreck, what was it, in 2019, I want to say, in spring training. Mm-hmm. Was never the same guy that year, but he finally got right, looked much better last year, and it looks like he's just continued that into this year, which is just such a huge boost for this bullpen. Can't really be overstated. While we're talking about guys in the pitching staff, I say we just move along to Waskar Yanoa, who's in the starting rotation now, and I guess he's just the fifth starter. We talked earlier about potentially having bullpen games and things like that, and how he performed so well in his first start, you know, outdueling Steven Strasburg, and I think that obviously earned him another start here today. I think, you know, when we did a podcast a couple weeks ago, we were expecting Bryce Wilson to be called up right about yesterday or today, and of course that's not going to happen, because when Waskar Yanoa goes out and does what he does, you can't get rid of that. You're gonna roll that out there and just, you know, let it ride. And why not? I mean, he's a young pitcher. It's crazy that he is, like, considerably younger than a lot of these other guys that we talk about as being these Braves young starting prospects, the Kyle Wrights, the Bryce Wilsons. Waskar, you know, I think he's 22, I want to say.
He is, yeah.
Just insane. And the thing I love about him, I think more than anything, in this Braves staff especially, is just his profile is so different, where he's like a bring the heat, the hard slider, an aggressive type of pitcher, as opposed to he's not going to be the guy who kind of like dances around the edges of the plate. He's going to just bring it. He's going to bring the stuff. And maybe he kind of refines his approach in it later in his career as he develops, you know, his pitching repertoire and everything. But I just have a lot of fun watching him throw. He's a big guy, strong guy. I know that's impressed Brian Snicker this season, the way he's built his body essentially to be able to perform the way he has. But hopefully he goes out there and it's his job to lose, I guess. I mean, if he just keeps going out there and performing, he's not going to lose his spot.
Yeah, I think we're at a point where, because he is getting some benefit, he's already on the roster. Like, there doesn't have to be any moves made to get him there, and that matters. You know, it's one of those, because Bryce Wilson is down at the alternate training site, why make a move if what you've got is working? And so Yanoa may have really kind of weaved his way in. And, I mean, we do have to talk about the fact he's benefiting from Mike Soroka, who we hadn't really discussed, having a setback. Mike Soroka, not with the leg, thankfully, but having a setback with his arm, which actually could be, I guess, scarier than him having an issue with the Achilles, in that it's like, okay, so he had a little bit of a setback, and they're like, let's pump the brakes on him. No need to rush him. Especially from what I've seen, it seems like there's no need to rush him if he's just going to slot into where Enoa's at. And Yanoa is, you know, averaging, like, what, around 96 and sometimes touching 99. It's like, why, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up the Mike Soroka point. I think it's almost like a blessing in disguise what has happened. You know, Brian Snicker kind of said, you know, one of the everything happens for a reason phrase. But, you know, I think that it has some merit in this situation where it just lets all parties kind of just forget about trying to hit some benchmark in terms of coming back by late April or mid-May or like whatever date it was that, you know, just at least it clears all that stuff off the table. You let Mike just sit back. He's not going to relax, but, you know, just let the arm relax, try to get some of that inflammation down, and then just see where you are. And I feel confident in saying that it's a, you know, it's one of these things because there is no structural damage from what they have assessed in the shoulder. So it's not like there is an actual tear or something that is wrong. It's just some general inflammation, which, you know, they've always said is going to be one of the things that they were going to have to watch out for with Mike coming back from this injury, which is that, you know, he didn't throw as much as he normally would have last year. So it's only kind of natural to expect that something like this may have happened. So I'm glad that he's going to be getting a little bit more rest, and especially when you have a guy like Waskar Yanoa who can come in and replace him. It's not like you're missing a ton. You know, he's given you good performances so far, and I think that the Braves can generally continue relying on those kinds of performances.
And it leads you to the thought of if the Braves are able to get to a point where Soroka comes back healthy and you just slot Yanoa as a super sub almost, I would call him, as someone who can come out of the bullpen or give you a spot start. It's just one of those ideal circumstances for a pitching staff that I think starters have struggled, but I expect them to work out their kinks, you know, here in the next month or two. Bullpen looking good, and now the bats have finally come alive. I think that was something that when we had last talked, the Braves, you know, having not won a game so far this season, it was very worrisome that the Braves weren't hitting. And since then, I can't even recall how many, is it like 9 home runs have been hit since we last were on the podcast?
Oh, probably. Yeah, probably something like that.
It's been a very high number in that it was 3 last night alone. Ozzie Albies also being one of those, getting back, finally, to the right side of the plate and scoring some offense.
We were joking before, well, I guess on via text, and it may have been, was it 2 pods ago? We were like worried about Ronald Acuna's form in spring training, and then now he's like the best hitter in baseball to start the season. And then I think all it took was like, we got to worry about Ozuna now on the next pod. And then after that, he hits a home run. It seems like he could be, or not, I'm sorry, not Ozuna, Ozzie Albies. He hits the home run, and now it looks like he could be kind of on his way back as well. Although it always helps with Ozzie Albies when he's hitting right-handed. And I know that, Caleb, this was also something that you were texting about, wondering if maybe he would just stop hitting. Is that what you were kind of insinuating? Was that, you know, maybe he'd just be better off not switch hitting, just hitting right-handed?
Well, it looked like just Twitter as a whole was kind of being the manager and saying, hey, Brian, seems like what we're seeing here is in 2 plate appearances against left-handed hitters, Ozzie's got a hit, and the rest of the time he's batting from the left side, and we're not seeing the same offensive production. Hey, I know that the ability to be able to switch hit, obviously a great ability to have, something, you know, as a part of your arsenal, great that you can do that. However, if it's working on one side, just leave. Yeah, that's once again one of those if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of deals that I just wonder if it's like, okay, if average fans and journalists are seeing this and going, you have to think that the rest of the team sees this and that Brian Snicker does too. And so I'm like, what are they waiting on? I really don't know what's going on, although I'm glad to see Ozzie get a hit, especially because that 2-hole is so valuable, and I don't want it to go to waste.
Right, yeah, and it does feel like a huge, it's kind of been like a black hole in this Braves lineup so far this season, just with Ozzie not hitting, and well, yeah, he's been the only one who's really occupied that role. I think to go back to the switch hitting thing, you know, I think that mainly this is a decision that Ozzy would make. You know, it's like down to the hitter himself, whether he feels comfortable doing this or not, you know, in terms of hitting right-handed against a right-handed pitcher. I think the reason why this comes up with Ozzy, well, it's obviously for two reasons. One is because if you just look at the splits, it's like ridiculous. Him hitting right-handed against left-handed pitchers, he's like an MVP quality hitter. Like, I don't have the stats pulled up in front of me. I wish I did the splits. But if you look at it, it's like an over one OPS. Absolutely ridiculous. And on top of that, just without even knowing the stats, when you watch him swing, it's a different swing from the left side and the right side. And you can just tell when he's hitting right-handed, there's so much more like bat control, and he's just like so much, it's so much more fluid and natural, as to where that right hand or that left-handed swing is more of just like a, it almost reminds me of, I don't know if you're old enough to remember Keith Lockhart for the Braves, but he was just like this little lefty second baseman. Yeah. And he was just like this like little yank, he would just like yank the ball into right field, and that's like kind of pretty much what Ozzy Albies does from that right side. When he's hitting from the left side, when he's hitting right-handed, he'll spray it everywhere. He's just a complete hitter, and so yeah, it's just like, oh, it's tantalizing to think about potentially getting that all the time.
Well, I think it just goes into basic mechanics of, I mean, you go into the average person writing with your dominant hand versus writing with your non-dominant hand. It doesn't look the same, you know, and granted, obviously, like, he's been doing this for years.
Yeah.
Guys who are switch hitters have been practicing this from a young age, typically, which is why you're able to do it. But there is something to be said for the fact of having a dominant side, having a dominant hand. And I don't know, I'm at a point where I'd like to see it. And if it doesn't work out, okay, fine, go back to what you're used to switching depending on the pitcher, but let's at least see if just working on your swing has improved enough to one side that it's worth sticking with it, you know, and just you know, let's make use of the two hole. I think that's kind of the conversation that you and I were having, where Ozzy, up until last night, hitting a home, hitting a two-run shot, hadn't been producing in that two-hole spot, and it was like, look, do we need to make a move? I mean, I know we have no designated hitter, but does Freddie need to slide up? Do we need to pull Dansby back up and swap the two like has been done in the past? I know Dansby isn't hitting particularly any better. I mean, technically, he's hitting better, but not great numbers-wise. Mm-hmm. Nobody in that bottom of the order is hitting very well. So it's like, do we need a change, or is it just let Ozzy hit from the right side of the plate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, what do you think, Joe?
So I would, if I were the manager, I would have Freddie Freeman hit second behind Ronald Acuña Jr. Like, to me, the order does not, like, well, the order does matter, but I feel like we get attached to the traditions of the order, you know, where it's like the best hitter hits third.
Yeah.
I think the best hitter should probably hit second, honestly, or first or second. And I think that you should have your best hitters hitting right next to each other in the order, because they protect each other. They will help each other when they're in that configuration. We saw that. We saw how well that played last year. Obviously, the issue with that, or what has been expressed by the team, is that the pitcher is hitting right in front of Ronald Acuña Jr. this year, obviously, instead of not having a DH involved. So there will probably be less opportunities for Ronald Acuña to hit with men on base, or at least somebody on first base in front of him. And likewise, that would, you know, filter down to whoever's hitting second. I think it should be Freddie Freeman. But I think there is an interesting argument, debate here to be had. I don't even know there isn't really a correct answer, to be perfectly honest. But I would prefer Freddie hitting second. And I think that in lieu of that, if we want to just have a discussion about who would be the better second hitter, I think it's Dansby Swanson. To me, he's just like a better contact hitter than Ozzy. And I think Ozzy gives you more power down lower in the lineup, where he might have more opportunities to drive in runs for himself.
Yeah, so I lean towards moving Dansby up in this lineup. I don't want Freddie Freeman hitting in the two hole. The reason why I don't want Freddie Freeman hitting the two hole is because you're going to be able to depend on Ronald Acuna hitting a lot of leadoff home runs. And because Acuna can hit those leadoff home runs, then he's not on base. And so when Freddie comes up there in the two hole, then he's hitting a lot of home runs and no one's on base. So I like the idea of someone who is maybe not hitting for so much power, who's really just getting on base, and you're scoring more runs that way. But at the same time, I mean, Dansby has shown once his wrist healed that he can hit for power too. So ideally, I like where it's at with Ozzy in the two hole, but I need Ozzy to be able to hit. Otherwise, this whole process isn't working. And so I think that's why I lean towards leave it where it's at, but let's see Ozzy hit from the right side of the plate so that we can. It seems like, you know, the guys know what they're, you know, Snit knows what he's doing. He's worked around this team long enough that he knows how this works, that it just, it needs to get through all of the kinks to work it out, to get this entire team together and hitting well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it'll be, there are obviously many options they can go to, and I tend to think we will see kind of a big shakeup in this batting order eventually. I think it's still a little bit early to make a big move like that, because you just don't want anybody's, you don't want to cause emotional damage to anybody here.
Yeah.
but you know, I think they waited about 6 weeks in 2019 before they made a big shuffle, and I think that they may wait about that long again this year if they feel like they have a lot more they can get out of this offense. So all sets up for a very interesting week for the Braves, though. Continuing this homestand, I think that they can start to rack up more wins. You got winnable games against the Marlins, and should be an interesting week. They could be in first place by the time we have our next pod.
Yeah, well, and it's nice, too, because the day before we go to record again is another Sunday night baseball game that is nationally televised, so it'll be nice to see. I think it was important for a national audience to see what this Braves team looks like, and was reminded again of the MVP level of Ronald Acuna, and so him being able to show that, I think, made a difference, even with the bit of controversy that really grabbed a lot of eyeballs, and it got a lot of attention from Major League Baseball, even though it was in that negative light. I'm interested to see what the Braves look like against a Cubs team that they haven't seen a full season, you know, playing in your division last year kind of made a lot of things look very strange. So I'm curious to see what that kind of level of competition looks like when we're not quite a week from now, but getting another nationally televised game that could start to stack, like you were saying, start to stack some wins before, after our next pod is when it'll get interesting, because you're going up against a big AL opponent in the Yankees and a team that you don't get to see very often. So that should be very interesting. But Joe, I think this kind of wraps up all of the things we wanted to cover this week. I'm very excited and interesting what we will see a week from now for everybody watching on Facebook Live and listening. Hopefully you will pick this up on the Odyssey. Whoop.
Ooh.
Almost. I started to do it. Like I've been such a, I tried to be such a team player, but on the Odyssey app, wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for everybody watching on Facebook Live. We'll catch you next week.